I was really struck by the speed and flexibility of making that move from the research to the kind of change that the research could support. And both groups produced great ideas with beautiful materials to drive them forward. I was really impressed by that.
I'm your host, Adam Met, and today we're talking with Myla Rosenthal, the co-founder and managing director of Sustainable Partners, Inc., along with Nia Smith and Rai Saad Khan, two of SPI's 2021 New Futures Fellows. If you've listened to the outro of this show or read the description of an episode, you might have realized that Planet Reimagined is executive produced by Sustainable Partners, a nonprofit that I founded in 2019. This podcast is just one of our programs. Another is our New Futures Fellowship. We bring together undergraduate and graduate students from around the world to create an academic paper and accompanying advocacy materials. I met Myla when she was the head of communications and advocacy for the United Nations Development Program. Now she's the managing director of SPI, along with heading our fellowship program and teaching courses in human rights at Columbia University. She and I speak for a few minutes about the concept of this fellowship program and then bring in Nia and Rai. Nia, an advocacy fellow from this summer's cohort, is an environmental designer and activist from Los Angeles, studying architecture in the hopes of building sustainable low-income housing. Rai, a research fellow also from this summer, is a geographer from Pakistan, pursuing a career in development, advocacy, and law. The four of us talk about their experience in the fellowship, including a discussion of their projects on waste management and coastal access. If you'd like to support the fellowship, make sure to follow Sustainable Partners on Instagram and Twitter. You can find the projects from this summer's cohort at sustainablepartnersinc.org/publications. And if you're interested in becoming a fellow, we'll be opening applications in the spring of 2022. A quick reminder that we're planting a tree for every person who subscribes to this podcast. So make sure to hit that subscribe button. And without further ado, here is Myla Rosenthal, Nia Smith, and Rai Saad Khan on Planet Reimagined. So, Myla, the worlds of research and advocacy, we're going to be talking a lot about it today. But in my experience, and I don't mean to speak for you, but maybe in your experience, academia and activism have been siloed in some ways and have really come together in other ways. In the halls of universities, we've seen students really become activists and advocates for some really important causes. But at the same time, hard, high-level research has really separated itself from this world of advocacy. Why do you think this happens?
I think there's an idea that academic research has to be so completely independent and has to be completely unbiased. And therefore, for it to be seen as part of advocacy, as part of activism, as feeding into a push for social change, is something that for some scholars is very uncomfortable. And so there's an idea that there should be kind of a firewall, a separation between pure research and then between pushing for change out in the very messy real world. I think it's that translation between the research to the change is the place that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, you mentioned the word uncomfortable, and I feel like students love to live in that space of uncomfortable, of pushing the boundaries. And do you see that in your academic experience, in your teaching?
Yes. Studying human rights and sustainable development is a challenging subject, and it should be, because it's talking about the most serious problems in the world right now. And it's always asking the question, what are the solutions? So it's not enough to just study what's wrong without using that framework to start suggesting what could be right. So the topics are challenging because they're full of human suffering and concern that so many of us have about what's happening around the world. But the answers are challenging too, because we have to think about what's realistic, what's practical, but also what's ambitious and what's aspirational. So I think that is a genuine challenge for professors, for students, for activists, for researchers.
So research and advocacy is the core of what we're going to be talking about today. What really feeds into making change from research and turning it into advocacy?
there are a lot of different avenues for change and pushing for change. You know, fundamental to it is the idea of power. Can you challenge power? Can you shift power? What influence can we have? And who has influence? So if you think of pushing for change as thinking about identifying all of those points of leverage and all of those points of influence and how to get them involved, then if research is part of developing the ideas that challenge power and that have the solutions that need to be implemented, then advocacy is the part of thinking about, well, how do you get those in the hands of policymakers and how do you convince policymakers to make those changes? So the connection is from the knowledge and the information to the policy and practice and enforcement.
So this makes so much sense. And this kind of idea is how this fellowship program at Sustainable Partners was ideated and built. Do you want to talk a little bit about the program?
Well, it's been an incredible summer, this program. The fellowship program at Sustainable Partners was to take the idea that you could combine research and advocacy in the same effort. So having fellows who came with more of the orientation from research, from fellows who came from more of the advocacy and campaigning side, have them design the projects together from the beginning so that the research has certainly had the independence and the quality of serious academic research, but that it was developed with recommendations and with an idea about how to move those recommendations forward to effect change on the issue that the research was focused on. So the fellowship was an opportunity for undergraduate and graduate students from around the world. And really, we had fellows from all over to come together and work in those kind of cross-disciplinary teams in the way that you need to bring in lots of different kinds of expertise for these complex issues and to draw on all of that enthusiasm and that commitment and all of the different kinds of backgrounds that our fellows brought, and for them to work together to create something new that was bigger than themselves and to draw on each other's creativity and knowledge to be able to really come up with something new and exciting.
Amazing. So we're going to be talking with two of the fellows today, one who focused on research this past summer and one who focused on advocacy. But like you said, the whole point of the fellowship program was for those who focused on research and those who focused on advocacy to come together and create these projects together.
One of our fellows is Nia Smith, who was an advocacy fellow. She's a designer and eco-activist. She's based in Los Angeles, and she's studying architecture. She's especially focused on fair and sustainable low-income housing, and she was working this summer on advocacy in her team. Another one of the fellows who we're going to be talking to is Rai Saad Khan, who was a research fellow. He's from Pakistan. Rai Saad is currently studying law, and he has an undergraduate background in geography and a special interest in human development and the environment.
And let's welcome them into the conversation.
Nia, thank you so much for joining us. To you, what is climate justice?
Wow. I don't know if there's a simple answer for that. So when I think about justice in general, I think about how we want to sort of level the playing fields in whatever field we might be talking about. In law, we're trying to make sure that a wronged party gets the actionable, correct thing that they deserve. They get their justice. And so to me, climate justice would be giving the wronged party, climate, the planet, the people who live here, their actionable item, the thing that they deserve to live here. And I feel like I've overcomplicated it already, but it's not a simple answer, unfortunately. It really is just making sure that we have a planet that we deserve to live on and making it last for a lot longer.
Great, thanks. And Rai, to you, what is climate justice?
Yeah, I think Nia did a great job of kind of explaining the concept. But for me, I think it's just recognizing that climate change or environmental issues are having differentiated impact. They're having kind of different social, environmental, health, economic consequences on different groups of people. So once we get to recognize that, once we get to recognize inequity within that, you know, it's about changing that. So climate justice is about recognizing and then hopefully trying to reduce the kind of social inequalities made worse by climate change.
So climate justice was the theme for the fellowship this summer, and both of you worked on incredibly interesting projects that we'll get to in a little while. But I'm curious, and let's start with Rye. What is the most interesting thing that you learned this summer?
For me, I think you guys talked about kind of main topic kind of research and advocacy. And for me, it was understanding kind of the different moving parts about research advocacy and how they go so hand in hand, and trying to really grapple with some of the ethics of research, trying to grapple with how consuming research and advocacy can be for everything from like editing. So communication is such a big part of research and advocacy, recognizing that, recognizing that editing goes hand in hand with that, recognizing that planning your research and collaborating with other researchers. Again, that takes a lot of skill, that takes a lot of effort, that takes a lot of time. So this entire process, I think, the process of having, you know, four or five different people from around the world being in a team and working to kind of solve one issue, I think that was the most interesting part of this entire summer for me. And, you know, I've done research before, but maybe I've done it for myself, you know, as a dissertation, but I've never done it like this. That was an incredible experience.
And Nia?
I completely agree, ditto. I think specifically regarding our project, the most interesting thing I found was how modern our waste infrastructure is. It's not until very recently that we started having issues with landfills and not being able to get rid of plastics and microplastics, because things had always been made to be disposed of or to be disposed of appropriately. So that was, it was really interesting to me to find out just how modern this issue is.
So just to follow up on that, Nia, you started talking a little bit about your project, and since it is focused on waste, but the whole theme for the summer was climate justice, how is waste a climate justice issue?
Well, it starts with waste being recognized as a climate issue. I don't think a lot of people understand how it factors into carbon emissions, taking up space, just lowering air quality all around. So it starts as a climate issue. And when we recognize it as a climate issue, in order for it to be fixed, we have to incorporate climate justice. So we know that there are communities that are being negatively and disproportionately impacted by waste created by other communities. They're the harmed party here that needs justice. When we think about, even as I was saying earlier, how waste used to be disposed of in completely different ways, there was an entire industry of just turning your cloth into paper. All of those people don't have jobs anymore because it doesn't exist as an infrastructure. Those are wronged parties. So when we think about the way waste affects the world around us, it's only fair to try and mitigate a lot of those issues for the people around us too.
And Rye, can you tell us a tiny bit about your project and how it fits into this climate justice framing?
Yeah, sure. So our project was about basically public coastal access and this notion of the right to the sea, the right to the oceans. So we kind of started with thinking about the effects of climate change, effects on different communities, basically, of climate change. And we started thinking about, for example, native communities who will be affected by the effect of sea level rise. And then from that, we had this notion of public coastal access, which is actually, you know, a right, and it's a legal right in US law, and in UK law, and common law all across the world. And we realized that even though it's this fundamental right we would see across these different nations, every community defines it very differently. So yeah, from this idea of public coastal access, we linked it back to climate justice in the sense that sea levels will be rising as a result of climate change, and that differentiated impact needs to be addressed. And the only way to tackle that differentiated impact is that you need to replace that with an equitable solution, an equitable framework, and one that can be followed all across the world. Because for this issue, we were so surprised that, you know, there was very little global agreement on the basics, on what would constitute public coastal access, how we would measure it, how we could protect that. So yeah.
For both of you, both from the point of view of advocacy and of research, we had a lot of different kinds of inputs over the course of the summer. And I'm curious about what were the parts of the fellowship that you thought were really helpful and you felt advanced your understanding of either research or advocacy or climate justice or all of the above. Nia, could you talk a little bit about the other activities of the fellowship?
Yeah, I think my favorite was probably when we met with Graham Watts and he just broke down how to write effectively. I've always loved workshopping my writing, so that was a lot of fun. And we learned a lot of skills that I hope to keep using. I hope that I'll find a use case for them even past this fellowship. I think what I liked the most, really and truly, and Rai, you touched on this earlier, was just the diversity of the program. So you've got everyone from all over the world coming together to do this kind of massive research project on a topic that somehow interests all of you in completely different situations, completely different backgrounds. Our advisor, Sarah, was really great. She was super helpful walking us through everything and super responsive. And that was a really good experience. It was having someone right there with us, sort of a third party to be like, hey, this needs work. This needs more information. I see where you're going with this. This makes sense. So yeah, I loved it. It was a great experience.
Rai, for you?
Yeah, so I think I would agree with a lot of what Nia just said. Session with Graham Watts was so useful. And yeah, writing is such a crucial part of advocacy, especially for an issue like climate change, which is so difficult. You know, fundamentally, it's a scientific concept that you then need to communicate to the masses. So that translation, turning that into a social political issue, is all about how you communicate that. So that was really interesting, learning how to kind of communicate effectively. And I know that's something I'll take away as long as I keep writing, basically. Also, our advisor, Mira, she was so great and so helpful. And again, gives you a different kind of perspective on not just on kind of how you edit later on, but also just how you formulate the research process, coming up with an hypothesis, coming up with a kind of research statement. And finally, I think the session we had at the beginning, so as we started the fellowship, we had the induction weekend and we had speakers that Myla, you and Adam had brought on. And I remember Aniket Shah, for example, he's talking about ESG frameworks. From my academic background, we've been taught to be very kind of skeptical of these kind of corporate endeavors to maybe greenwash climate change. But I think listening to it from his perspective really did change the way I thought about that. So that was very interesting.
That's great. Thanks. I actually, on that point, I'd love to ask Nia as well. You know, we were really fortunate as part of the fellowship to be able to arrange these discussions with people from the United Nations and from different organizations around the world, including India and the Virgin Islands, talking about climate justice in their own areas. We had people from companies. So we had a range of different kind of voices talking about aspects of climate justice and sustainability. And Nia, I'm wondering if there are things in those discussions that really surprised you, you hadn't known before, or that really stuck with you?
There was, and unfortunately, I can't remember the speaker who brought it up to us, but there is someone who was talking about the way that you explain the SDGs and the way you break them down and tell other people about them. And this can apply to any project, anything that requires activism or just anything that you're working on, and how you want to get it down to its like most essential first principles and just keep whittling it down until you get to that very point. And that's actually been something that stuck with me since we had that conversation, where anything that I've been trying to do with work, even in the research project, every idea that we bring up, I try to break it down to its most core components. So even when you asked me about climate justice, I had to separate the two words and take them from there. And I found that it's made explaining things and even my understanding of the things that I am passionate about a lot easier when I break it down to the smallest possible points and then build it back up from there. And to Rai's point, the speaker who is talking to us about greenwashing, it was a very interesting perspective, I will say that, because it's not necessarily something that I would have thought about in terms of greenwashing or how businesses are trying to operate during the climate justice movement.
I agree with both of you. One of the most interesting points that I think Aniket Shah made, who you mentioned, about greenwashing was about oil companies themselves and oil and gas companies, that they have the infrastructure to be able to incorporate renewable energy projects, and they have the money to invest in renewable energy projects. So we need to be pushing towards this future where these kind of companies that historically have been completely destroying the planet, and we even saw it just a few days ago with oil spills off the coast of California, and we see them all the time. But how do we engage these companies as partners when historically they have been the villains in the story of climate change? So it's getting all of these different perspectives were really interesting for me as well. I really want to push both of you on one thing that each of you mentioned. And Rye, the thing I want to push you a little bit on is you mentioned about communicating these issues effectively and how in the writing session you learned about that. And because you came in as a researcher, what was it like for you to do research alongside these people that were there as advocates? How did it change the way you approach how you do research?
Yeah, I think the great thing about the way we did the research was the advocacy team was there from the beginning. It was designed that way. So they were kind of part of that research process. They were part of shaping, obviously, the hypotheses, the questions we wanted to ask, the eventual essay we then wrote. And so with every step of the way, it really became about, for example, impact, or what do we really having that advocacy focus and therefore changing our questions, really sharpening our questions that we're asking to think about how can this produce something that's deliverable, communicable, and all of those things. So just to give a little bit more context, Mercy on our team, who's on our advocacy team, she is a journalist, and that really sharpened the way we did our research as well, because part of her journalism was talking to our communities affected by climate change. And so instantly, I think when she brought up that experience, that really sharpened all of our interests and brought us all together, because we started thinking about communities and impacts of climate change, whereas it looks like the other their research is more about, you know, climate mitigation, waste, carbon mitigation, for example. Ours is about the effects of climate change, just from simply because we had someone in the team who was in advocacy and who could give us that viewpoint, and that became unmissable. So yeah, I think when you have that perspective, it suddenly it changes everything, and you're just focused on delivering your goal. And maybe this is on a slightly more academic point of view, but then I think it also changes the kind of epistemologies you take, your approach to kind of research as well, when you have these communities in mind, because then you're suddenly thinking about, you know, the ethics or the way you're doing research, the kind of your positionality, all of these things. And all of that comes, I think, from an advocacy focus. So that was a huge draw to this program. Huge success as well, I think.
Amazing. And Nia, the point that I want to ask you about specifically is something that you mentioned a little bit earlier about people coming together from different expertise and finding a project that overlapped with everybody's interests. And somehow that ended up happening. But in that kind of somehow, that is one of the key points of this fellowship program, in that we're bringing together people who come from such different backgrounds, live in different places, are really excited about different things. But at the same time, you can find this overlap in this world of sustainability and world of climate. What was that process like for you and your team trying to find that thing that made all of you excited, even though you came from such different backgrounds?
Well, first of all, I had an amazing team. I can't believe that it would have gone as smoothly as it did with a different combination of people. Absolutely loved my team. So it does come down to making sure you've got a good balance. I'm not sure how that happened. It was probably pure magic, but I love it. Basically, the biggest thing for me with our team was making sure everyone understood that their voice did matter. So I wanted everyone to just throw something that you're interested in, just throw your ideas out there. So we were looking at fishing for a while. Rawanthi was really into fashion, so she wanted to incorporate that. Ghislaine is into tech. He was our tech guy, so he wanted to incorporate that. But I do know that it came down to waste and fishing. And so what we tried to do was, based on everybody's core interests in those two topics, where could we find what you wanted to talk about? How did this relate to your everyday? And when we were talking about fishing, we were all like, yeah, I mean, like, everyone eats fish and there's lakes and the fish have problems. But whenever we talk about waste, it's like Rawanthi and Anna were talking about waste pickers. Jack and I were talking about how California tries to do all these things, but we're not doing it all that well. And Ghislaine was talking about how tech could be a huge part of mitigating waste. And we realized this is something that speaks to all of us, and we can bring our ideas and our passions together for this one project. And that's kind of what it came down to, was picking a topic that not just related to all of us and interested us, but was going to let us use our individual skills and the things that we wanted to talk about. So I happened to be overseas during the whole fellowship. And even then, all of the research I was doing overseas came right back to our core project. So that was the most important part for us.
Myla, I have a question for you. So Nia talked about how the groups came together and it was like magic. What was that like for you in constructing the group since you ran the fellowship this summer?
Well, it was magic for me too. One of the things that was really important to us when we were launching the fellowship and the call for applications was to try to reach potential applicants in countries around the world with a lot of different kinds of expertise. And so we really targeted the outreach that we did to make sure it was global as possible. We focused on a number of countries and regions. And we also tailored the outreach for research and advocacy so that we would get those different kinds of skills and that we would bring in the kind of variety of backgrounds that we were looking for. So we started with a tremendous candidate pool, hundreds of applicants and impressive applicants from so many different places. So we were already starting from a really good position. But I would say that the final fellows who we chose through this very careful review process, both of you will remember the intensity of our discussions and our rounds of interviews and really wanting to make sure that we had taken advantage of that great pool of talent to find the greatest talents. And with all of you looking for that quality of being able to bring so much expertise and talent and skill, but then also of being open to working with others and learning from others. And so being deliberate about thinking about what are all those qualities we were hoping to have so that we could find all of you in, I think, of those kind of tipping point moments in your academic development, in your career planning, where this fellowship could really help add to where you're going and that you could contribute something to your group so you were learning from each other. It was magic, art, and science. They brought together these teams this summer.
So I learned a few really interesting things from the fellows as well. And I'm curious, Myla, what you feel you took away from them. The projects themselves, the papers that they wrote, and the advocacy materials that were created were such great pairings. I think that both groups did an incredible job, like Rai was talking about earlier, about effective communication of really complex ideas. And it helped me to understand ideas that I knew nothing about, even though I live and breathe this space all the time. I'm curious, Myla, are there any specific takeaways that you got from the fellows?
All of those, yes. I was really struck by the speed and flexibility of how you all very quickly developed your research. You pivoted a lot as you found things out. I mean, it was exactly what you're looking for in a extremely expert research group, which is of being able to navigate a very complex field and find where the gaps were that you could help fill in. Additionally, I think the ways that in both groups, as you started thinking about advocacy, you really looked at recommendations, at concrete recommendations. So making that move from the research to the kind of change that the research could support. And then also very quickly, both groups were so nimble in then thinking about what kind of campaign would help support moving forward those recommendations. So I completely agree with Adam. I think from the advocacy point of view, we really built on what the research had been and produced great ideas with beautiful materials to drive them forward. I was really impressed by that.
I was just worried that, I mean, because in hindsight, it looks like it all fell into place and it did. But I just remember thinking that, oh no, like what is Myla going to think in the weeks in which we're still formulating a topic? Because I guess, yeah, it's a very stressful time. But yeah, in hindsight, it all did just very much fall into place.
One of the things we got worried about is we'd been staring at the same topics and research documents and ideas for weeks and weeks on end that at some point we were like, does this even make sense anymore? Like, is this even slightly a good idea? If we explain this to someone else, do they understand what we're talking about? And so we really couldn't have done it without the other teams there to reference and to talk to. Anna and I spent a lot of time talking to Mercy and Vanessa and be like, do you guys get it? Do you get what we're doing? We really couldn't do it without our advisors and you guys. Thank you so much for putting this together. It was an impactful and important piece of research that we were able to put together, and we wouldn't have been able to do it without everyone, not just our team.
Nia, do you think specifically the research and advocacy you did this summer, or generally the topic of climate justice, do you think that's going to be part of your future?
Yeah, I don't think I can get rid of it now. I think we're a little entwined, climate justice and me. I moved recently, and the very first thing I did was like try to figure out where my composting locations were, where the farmers market are. I refuse to take plastic bags. It's been very hard trying to get new supplies because everything comes in too much packaging, but it's fine. It's the sacrifices we make to, you know, for climate justice. But I don't think I can walk away from the research that we did, the results that we found, the recommendations that we made. This is part of me now, and I plan on continuing the work.
And Rye, do you think this is part of your future?
Completely, and likewise to what Nia said. Like, I feel like we've crossed the Rubicon with this research, because yeah, it becomes part of you, and you can't just help but think about what you've written, what you found, what you studied. And yeah, I think even from the induction sessions, I think I took that away. And I'm currently working in public sector in Pakistan. That's why I moved to Islamabad. And so in the government authority I'm working in, I remember like a week or two after we had those sessions, I come up with this proposal. I was like, we need to have a sustainability framework. We need to do this and we need to do that. And yeah, I think that's just as the weeks and the 2 months went by, that's just solidified. And I know that this is the kind of direction I want my career to maybe go in, sustainability, or at least wherever I am working, I want to be that person who talks about sustainability and brings everyone to the table thinking about that as well.
So for everybody who is listening to this episode of the podcast, I want to make sure that you go and look at both the research projects and the advocacy materials that were created by both of these groups that Rye and Nia were in, because not only are the papers extremely detailed, but really accessible in that they are relatively short for white papers and research papers, which was one of the requirements that we had for the fellowship. But the advocacy materials themselves were also really engaging, and you can see those on the Sustainable Partners Instagram page and also on our website. Before we wrap up, I want to ask one last question about advocacy and research together. So, Rye, you said you're working in the public sector. How do you see advocacy and research coming together in the work that you're doing right now?
I think there are limitations, especially after doing this job at the same time as doing this research role. I realized that there are kind of limitations, for example, where I'm working or in the Pakistani government overall, when it comes to research capabilities. And so you realize that, you know, research can really guide the decisions you make. And that is advocacy as well. Advocacy is through kind of changing the narrative, changing kind of public policy. And so, yeah, it's just this link from research to advocacy to decision-making that I've now kind of really solidified in my mind. And I can see where that might be lacking in the public sector in Pakistan or in kind of countries across the world just because of limited resources. And so I constantly talk about what I'm making kind of informed decisions in the workplace, making decisions based on science, but also on the advocacy side, for example, based on really having empathy with the communities that you're targeting, because that's what the research and advocacy hand in hand taught me, you know, how to think about the communities and how to really kind of position your entire process in line with the kind of goals you want and you hear they want as well.
Yeah. And for Nia, clearly your recent move and climate justice being such a big part of you and your life, and now it's impossible to disconnect climate justice from who you are as a person. How do you think this bridge between research and advocacy in general is going to inform the kinds of decisions that you make in your work and in your life?
Well, one of the things that I've found is that research and advocacy are less of a step-by-step process. Like, you do your research and then you come up with advocacy materials. I think it's more that the two should be happening at the same time. The people who are developing your marketing materials need to be on the same team that's researching the project. And they probably don't have to be doing any of the science or the data collecting or anything, but they have to be incredibly familiar with that, because they're going to inform what the research team is doing and vice versa. And I found that's been very helpful, especially given my career choices, that they tend to be research-based, and I just happen to have an advocacy background. And being able to meld the two of those in a really healthy way, I think, is what makes it a lot easier for us to have these conversations about climate justice and then actionable delivery items. It's always going to come back to what is our response going to be. And the only way we're ever going to find that is by bringing advocates and researchers to the table and getting everybody on the same page.
I want to thank both of you for your incredible dedication and energy and excitement and work this summer. It created two projects and one fellowship that was incredibly inspiring for me. And I also want to give an enormous thanks to Myla, who guided this program. It came out, and the results of the program and the process of it were more than anything I could have possibly imagined. So thank you all for making that and this program happen in different ways.
Thank you, Myla and Adam. We couldn't have done it without you guys.
Thank you so much, Myla and Adam.
Thank you both.
Thanks so much for listening. If you want to support this podcast, please visit sustainablepartnersinc.org/donate. Since we are a nonprofit, any little bit of funding helps us to bring you more episodes like this one. Today's episode would not have been possible without our amazing team. Producer and editor, Shelby Kaufman, and associate producer and engineer, Sophie Yu. I'm your host, Adam Mett, and thanks for listening to Planet Reimagined.